It's the My Michelle Live podcast.
My Michelle Live, Sci Tech Talk, taking the God story to a geeky place. Here's Michelle.
Hey, thank you for listening to My Michelle Live, where today we look deep into science, technology, for a deeper story, maybe even the God story. Today, it is a strange story because there are waves that are coming from outer space. What are they? What can they tell us? And do they reveal a deeper story?
At 13 minutes past the hour, and right now on our request line, I've got Mike Ledgerwood on the phone. Hey, babe, what would you like to hear?
We are observing your Earth.
Listen, Mike, I'm sorry, babe, but we can't...
We'd like to make...
I'm sorry, Mike, we... There's...
A contact with you, baby.
Oh, a blast from way past the Carpenters. We're talking about waves coming from the center of the universe. We're going to take it on with Dr. Hugh Ross. He's the president, founder of Reasons to Believe. He's written extraordinary books like Beyond the Cosmos, The Creator and the Cosmos, and many, many more. Dr. Ross, it's good to connect with you again.
Well, thank you for having me on your show.
So these radio waves, it's been being reported all over the globe, and we're mystified because we don't know what it is.
What's that repeating radio signal from the Milky Way center?
The heart of the Milky Way galaxy, also known as the galactic center, is emitting some unusual radio wave.
Now have word that space experts are saying they've detected a new unusual radio wave or set of radio waves.
Extraordinary signals that are unlike anything known to mankind.
Constantly repeating, and it's something we've never heard before.
Something we've never heard before. So as we get into this today, astronomers of the University of Sydney detected this strange signal emitting from the center of the Milky Way. The study, or a study on the findings, was published in the Astrophysical Journal. And this is just another thing that is captivating the world. What's out there? What could it mean? And when we say radio waves, we're not talking a station from some alien planet, are we?
No, we're not. My background was in radio astronomy, and I've got the paper right here, and it reads quite differently than all the web articles that you see out there.
Isn't that the way it always is?
Well, that's what I tell people. When you see a web article, only trust those that actually give you a link to the actual paper in which it's based, and go to the paper and see what it says. And actually, it's quite a fascinating paper. It's right up my bailiwick. This is the kind of work I used to do when I was at Caltech. And what's making it so interesting, number one, is not right at the galactic center. It's about 4 degrees away from the galactic center. But it is an object that's somewhere in the bulge of our galaxy. And it's highly variable, but it's only emitting radio wavelengths so far that we can detect. As they look forward to X-ray wavelengths, couldn't see anything. Look forward in the near infrared and couldn't see anything. And that's what's got astronomers mystified. Why are we only seeing it at radio wavelengths? When you get to all the way to the end of the paper, it says, well, we haven't really done an exhaustive search. We need to keep looking. And let's see if we can find more objects like this. But I'll tell you what really caught my attention, Michelle, is that this thing is highly circularly polarized, 25% circular polarization, 80% regular polarization. The only objects I know that can have that degree of a circular and linear polarization are black holes and neutron stars. And so we already know that the supermassive black hole at the center of our galaxy is embedded in a cloud of comets and asteroids. And the reason why we see tiny variations in the supermassive black hole at the center of our galaxy, every hour or so, it gobbles up one of these small comets or asteroids. So we're not getting huge flares. We're getting literally on a daily basis, sometimes on an hourly basis, these small flares. And I'm wondering if this object that that has just been discovered is something similar, a stellar black hole, which means that it's roughly the mass of a massive star, not millions of times the mass of the sun, but a few times the mass of the sun. And if it's embedded in a cloud of small objects, that might explain the variability we see. And if it's actually gobbling up gas of a certain characteristic, it could explain why it has such a steep radio spectrum and why we haven't detected anything at X-ray and infrared wavelengths. Now, that's not in the paper. That's just my conclusions as a radio astronomer with experience looking at these objects, saying, I think that's what we're looking at.
Maybe we can start with, what are radio waves? People think of radio waves and they think broadcast. Radio waves are actually fairly fascinating. There's the Maxwellian equations that came out of 1867. It all comes down to the brilliance, the extraordinary ability of man to look into what's happening around us in nature, on our planet and beyond, and look at calculations and say, wow, there's something happening here. Let's talk about radio waves.
Yeah, well, radio waves are part of light, the electromagnetic spectrum. And so we have what we see with our eyes, which we call the visible part of the spectrum. The shorter wavelengths would be ultraviolet and X-ray and gamma ray. But if you go the other direction, beyond what we can see with the eye, you've got longer wavelengths that are infrared. And then you've got the millimeter wavelengths, where the wavelengths are literally millimeters in length. And then you've got the radio waves. And the radio waves can either be rather short, like centimeter length wavelength, or they can be quite long, several meters. And when I was active doing observations, I did both the low and the high frequency radio. But I would tell lay people, it's just like looking through a telescope. I mean, we use a big telescope to collect these long wavelengths. It's just simply another extension of the electromagnetic spectrum. But what we astronomers try to do when we find an interesting object like this is observe it over the entire range of the electromagnetic spectrum. That kind of really helps identify what it is. And so far, this object is only showing us signals in the radio part of the electromagnetic spectrum. Now, as the authors admit, they haven't done an exhaustive search of other wavelengths. They're saying we need to do that. And we need to see if there's other objects like this. And if I'm right that we're probably looking at a small black hole that's gobbling up small gas clouds or comets in its vicinity, we're going to find more of these objects. And they should be most easy to find in the center of our galaxy and in the center of nearby. I think we ought to look for them in the Andromeda galaxy. Although, as I read the paper, the strength of the radio signal is what's called a Millijansky, which means it's not that bright. And so it could be a real challenge to detect it in the Andromeda galaxy.
You have your idea, your conclusions, what it might be. We can talk a little bit about what it definitely isn't and how we know what it isn't. I know that with the broadcast of there's radio signals coming from the center of our universe, is someone trying to contact us? And people who are SETI conscious, which is the search for extraterrestrial life, they have got their eyes wide open, their ears perked. And let's listen for a second.
What would a technically sophisticated alien culture look like? Artificially focused electromagnetic waves. And we've been leaking them into space for over 80 years. That means any planet within 80 light years of Earth is receiving them. Signals like this are simple to generate and use and carry well over vast distances. That's why SETI scientists believe alien cultures might be leaking them just like
we are. But these are artificial waves. There's a difference. So you know that. I'm sorry to say, it seems as though this is not ET phoning home.
It's not because the radio signals we're getting are quite random. There's no structure to them that would be able to communicate a message. And given that it's coming from near the center of our galaxy, I mean, we anticipate that there's going to be, small black holes there, neutron stars that should be able to emanate this radiation. I mean, what I find fascinating is one reason why we know there can't be nearby intelligent civilizations. They would have been so upset with us broadcasting the Beverly Hillbillies for the last 50 years that they would have come to shut us up. Or they might have concluded, well, I guess there can't be intelligent life in this part of the galaxy.
They may be watching the evening news. Why the center of the universe? You said the Andromeda Galaxy, we might be looking for similar signals. Does location have anything to do with this?
Well, you're going to have a higher probability of finding stellar mass black holes in the center of a galaxy. So
why is that? And this is just
because you got a greater density of stars.
Okay.
And often black holes will form where you got two stars merged together to make a bigger star. I mean, we've already observed that with a gravity wave telescope, where you get two neutron stars merging together to make a black hole. So, but you're going to need high stellar density for that to happen. And that's what you have in the cores of galaxies. So that's a good place to look. And the reason I mentioned the Andromeda Galaxy is that it's got a much larger supermassive black hole in its core, which is going to have a higher probability of attracting in stellar mass black holes. So that'd be another good place to look, and it's not that far away. The paper suggests that maybe we ought to look in the Large Magellanic Cloud, but the density of stars there is nowhere near as high. It's in the center of our galaxy, or the Andromeda Galaxy.
Hugh, what fascinates you about this story?
Well, what fascinates me about it is that this could be a new kind of object. I don't think it's really a new kind of object. That's what's got some people speculating. Maybe this is a brand new astronomical object that we've never understood before. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking what it really is a neutron star or a black hole that's in an unusual environment. To have it in an environment where it's surrounded by small gas clouds, that's what would make it exciting. And I definitely like how they end their paper by saying, this is a call to astronomers. Let's look and see if we can find other objects like this. Let's actually look across the electromagnetic spectrum and see if we can learn more about this object, because we've never seen anything like this before.
Okay.
That always excites astronomers.
Yeah.
When we find something. I remember when they found the first pulsar. I mean, that really generated worldwide excitement in the astronauts, because it said, we've never seen anything like this before. This is our chance to learn new astrophysics. And I'm not sure we're going to learn any new astrophysics. And again, what caught my attention is a high degree of circular polarized radiation. And this could actually impact origin of life research. And it's something we've written about in our book, Origins of Life, is that if you want to get homochiral amino acids or homochiral ribose sugars, which are essential to put together the proteins, the DNA, and the RNA. The only naturalistic source we found that can do that with any degree of efficiency is circularly polarized ultraviolet radiation. And so this may be one of those objects that has that. Okay. However, as I wrote in Origins of Life, trying to make the origin of life happen next to a black hole or a neutron star is utterly absurd. The radiation out there is bound to destroy any molecular structure that has any meaningfulness for the origin of life. But I wouldn't be surprised if origin of life researchers say, hey, wow, here's a strong ultraviolet or a circularly polarized source that we can tap into. Keep in mind, though, they've yet to see if there's any ultraviolet circularly polarized radiation. We know that radio circularly polarized radiation is going to be of no help for getting all the molecules, amino acids lined up left-handed and the ribose sugars right-handed.
So we can know that looking out in the universe actually helps us to look inward. It helps us to understand a little bit more of why all of this is, how all of this happened. Our Earth is absolutely mind-bogglingly extraordinary, diverse, rich with life. Humanity is unique among the creatures that crawl on this planet, and from what we know thus far in the universe, when we study things outside of our planet, much like this mysterious new waves, are we learning something? And that's as you said, you have these guys who are saying, hey, look, that's important. That's important for us to say, what could this mean, right?
Well, Michelle, I think my next book is not out yet, but it's written, Designed to the Core. It makes exactly that theme, that when you look at the large scale structure of the universe, or the super galaxy cluster in which we live, there is no other super galaxy cluster like the one we're in, and it must have those features for life to be possible. Then you look at our galaxy cluster, same story. It's a galaxy cluster like no other. It's unique in having the features we need for advanced life to exist. And it's all the way down the line. We live in a unique grouping of galaxies. Our galaxy is like no other galaxy we've ever seen. There is no galaxy far, far away that's anything like our galaxy. And then we live in what's called the local bubble inside our galaxy. It too has unique design features. And basically I'm making the point in my next book, no matter what size scales we look at, from the entire universe all the way down to what's inside the interior of the moon, what's inside the interior of comets and asteroids, what's inside the interior of the Earth or the Sun, it's all extraordinarily fine-tuned to make possible the existence of advanced life here on planet Earth. And we need it all. None of it's wasted. I mean, a lot of my peers think, well, look at this vast universe. This was created for us. It seems like such a waste. It's not a waste. We need every bit of it in order to have advanced life here on planet Earth. The whole universe exists so that we can have civilization here on planet Earth.
It's mind-blowing.
I think what really blows me away, when you actually look at the fine-tuning, what you see is it's all designed to make possible billions of human beings to live on one planet at one time so that they can have the technology to be able to communicate the message of redemption to billions of people who can respond to that message. That's something you see in the Bible, that God begins his works of redemption before he creates anything at all. And that's what I've been communicating in my latest books. When we look at the universe, from the largest scales all the way down to the smallest scales, all the way down to the particles inside the atom, every bit of it is designed for the purpose of making possible the redemption of billions of human beings from their propensity for committing sin and evil.
We can know this because of consistency, because there's order and consistency. There is mathematics all in the universe, and we see that. So I love that you're talking about scale. You can get scale. We can talk with one of your associates there, Dr. Fuz Rana, a microbiologist. You know, you run the gamut from the universe as an astrophysicist to a microbiologist. So you're going scale there, large to small. And in each one of those scales, you see the very story that you just told us. And it's a story of consistency. There's incredible consistency in the universe. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Ross, but that's why we can look at a story like this with mysterious waves now, signals emitting from the center of the Milky Way. We can look at that and we can say, okay, based on what we know and consistency, you can formulate ideas. Consistency and order speaks to an order giver, just like programming in a computer speaks to a programmer. Am I drawing the right conclusion here?
You are. I mean, like if you were to compare Hinduism to Christianity, Hinduism has got 3 million plus gods. They're all involved in creation. And so a core of Hindu thinking is that when we look at the universe, it's going to be filled with all kinds of inconsistencies. Things are not going to be harmonious. It's all going to be mixed up. But if you've got a single creator with a single plan and purpose, you're going to see consistency throughout the whole spectrum of scientific investigation. And I think that explains why we're seeing so many engineers and scientists in places like India responding to the Christian faith, because they're realizing the Christian worldview has got the correct perspective on why the universe looks the way it does, why the cell looks the way it does, why the atom looks the way it does, and why we see the same plan and order from the various tiniest scales of fundamental particles all the way up to the large-scale structure of the universe.
It's astounding, because we've come through an era that said science has killed God. But now we're coming to a place with more discoveries, more findings that actually point out that science is pointing to God.
Very definitely. That's one of my passions. I mean, every week I write a blog called Today's New Reason to Believe, basically making the point every single day, scientific research papers are being published that give us a stronger case for the Christian faith. You see this in Job and Psalms. The more we learn about nature, the more evidence we'll find for the supernatural handiwork of the Creator. And so that's my passion, reading the scientific literature, finding papers like this, and helping people who are not scientists to see the connection, how this on a daily basis is giving us more evidence for the God of the Bible.
Do you know this story that we're talking about with these waves coming from the center of the galaxy, to me also point out something that is a bit uncomfortable in our era, Hugh, and that's that we need to be humbled a little bit. We really do think we know it all.
Well, when I first started studying astronomy as a seven-year-old, we were able to see with our telescopes out to about 0.001% of the entire observable extent of the universe. Today, we're getting close to 100%. However, we look at the extreme distances, all we can see are the brightest objects. I mean, I'm excited about the James Webb Telescope being launched next month, because that's going to be the first instrument in the hands of astronomers that will actually be able to see individual stars.
Wow.
Just after the cosmic creation event. And so, but you know, that's not going to plumb the depths. I mean, you know, astronomers joke that if we really want to understand unified field theory, we're going to need a particle accelerator 40 trillion miles long. And now that's not going to be funded anytime soon. So there's always more to learn. As I tell my fellow astronomers, we don't have to worry about being unemployed because we discovered everything. That's not going to happen.
Job security right there. There are some others,
right?
There's some other stories that are circulating about several asteroids bigger, they say, than the Great Pyramid of Giza is approaching the Earth in the coming weeks. There's a geomagnetic storm headed for Earth. The aurora could actually be visible across the northern U.S. I mean, these are things that have been happening recently or will be taking place. And as we look out into the cosmos, there's so much more to be worried about and afraid about. There's always an asteroid hurling itself to the Earth, or a comet that is going to pass nearby. Could it be the end? Could it destroy us like they say it destroyed the dinosaurs? When we look at the universe and we see again that order, and we see purpose, it also gives us a peace.
Well, it does. I mean, Neil deGrasse Tyson, he's an astrophysicist who's an atheist. And he says, if you look seriously at the universe, it's clear that it's out to kill us. Look at all the stuff that's out there. But, you know, I think
forget the universe. Before you finish, let's just bring it down to a micro level. We're talking about consistency. You could look out at the universe and think it's going to kill us. You could look out at the evening news and see what's going on in our planet or in our own neighborhood. So,
well, What I notice as an astrophysicist, though, is that, yes, there's all these dangers in the universe, but we happen to be in the one location at the one time in the history of the universe where we're living in the safest possible epoch and the safest possible location. That tells me that somebody's taking care of us. Yes, the universe is a dangerous place, but right now we're at the safest epoch. We're in a 100,000-year window of the history of the universe. It's really the only window where it's safe enough to have global human civilization. And so, yeah, we're going to leave that window relatively soon. But right now, conditions are really good. Someone's looking out for us. So
you believe that the Bible does run, obviously, if the God created the universe, runs very much parallel with what's happening in the world with science, and where you see a story, a bigger story, a deeper story, a God story in the findings of the day. You see a God story in how everything is fitting together for a master plan. I wanted to end our time together with that master plan, what all of this is saying to you and why it's important to each and everyone who is listening, watching, or reading today.
Well, in a couple of days, I'm going to be engaging a group of atheist scientists just answering their questions. And this is the question they have is like, look at all the bad stuff that can happen. And I says, yeah, but look at all the good stuff that can happen. You know, let's look at it both ways and just recognize that indeed the entire universe is fine-tuned, not just to allow us to exist, but to eliminate evil and suffering once and for all. Because a lot of the questions these atheist scientists are asking, if there's a God, why do children get cancer? And I said, well, God's got a larger purpose. This is not the only universe. Christianity is not a one creation model. It's a two creation model. This is the very best possible creation that God could have created in order to eradicate evil and suffering once and for all, while he enhances the human free will capability to express and experience love. That was God's primary purpose in creating, was to magnify the expression of his love. So in this universe, this creation, he's on a quest to eradicate efficiently and rapidly all evil and suffering. And that requires that we live in a universe with thermodynamics, electromagnetism. You're talking about the electromagnetic theory a little while ago, gravity, the strong and weak nuclear force. And I've written in Why the Universe is the Way It Is, God designed these laws of physics to be tools in his hands, to reward virtue, to encourage us to avoid evil, but also to point us that we need his help to be delivered from evil and suffering once and for all. And the promise we see in the Bible, the moment that evil has been eradicated by God, this universe will fulfill its purpose, and God's going to replace it with a brand new creation where there will be no gravity, there will be no thermodynamics or electromagnetism. None of the bad things that are happening in this universe will ever happen again. But if God were to put us in that realm right now, evil would run out of control. His goal is to eradicate evil first, then bring us into this ultimate creation. And you see this in John chapter 16, the last verse, where Jesus says to his disciples, in this world, you'll have tribulation, but take heart, I've overcome the world. And as a physicist, I like to paraphrase that verse. In this world, you'll have thermodynamics, but take heart, I've overcome thermodynamics. And yes, we do see evidence in scripture of God occasionally performing a miracle to rescue people from the consequences of thermodynamics and gravity. But notice, he does it on rare occasions, because if he were to do it all the time, rescue us every time we get into trouble, then that would prevent gravity and thermodynamics and electromagnetism from doing what God intends it to do, to be a tool to eradicate evil once and for all. So his normative plan is to allow us to experience the consequences of thermodynamics, gravity, and electromagnetism. Only on rare occasions will he supernaturally intervene. And he only does that where supernatural interventions will actually have a greater effect on eradicating evil and allowing us to experience the laws of physics that govern the universe.
It's an important thing to wrap our heads around because it is the biggest question that people ask where God is concerned. If there's a God, why is there evil in the world? And it's funny to ask that question when we feel it's perfectly fine to raise our fist to God, to curse God, and to do our own thing, to have free will, to make our own decisions. And I feel like, excuse me for not giving a scientific explanation, but come on, you tell your kid, don't touch the hot stove. They touch the hot stove. Why did you let me get burned? I mean, it really, you don't have to be as smart as Hugh Ross to figure that one out, sweetheart. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's like the people who raise that objection are the same people who sign up for a challenging college level course. It's like, you know, if you sign up for that course, that professor is going to make you suffer. But, you know, they go for it because they know the suffering is brief and it's going to prepare them for a really rewarding career. It's the same thing for us. God exposes us for just a few decades to gravity, thermodynamics, and electromagnetism, because he knows it's going to prepare us for an incredible, unimaginable reward in a new creation. So just like it's worth it to sign up for a college level course that's challenging, likewise, it's worth it to sign up for this life. And you see that message in the Bible. God intends that our life here in this universe would be challenging. But just like a really good course, it's fun to take a challenging course. And so we need to enjoy the training and experience we're going through in this life.
I like that. And I wanted to end with the idea that as God has intervened at times in our existence in this universe, he did so in the biggest way by sending his son Jesus Christ to take our sins, to help us to be part of this grand plan to eradicate what really destroys us and have a relationship with God, an intimate relationship with God. Whew, sign me up. I think one of your books in the future, if I could put my request in, would be the idea of what heaven might be like without gravity, without thermodynamics, without sin. What kind of struggle will, that's all we know is that life is struggle and overcoming. What would that be like? So I'm just saying that might be an interesting book coming up.
Well, I'm ready for it. I mean, what I like is the fact that, you know, we're going to be rulers and teachers over the angels. And it's because we get to go through the course. They get to watch us going through the course.
Wow.
All this suffering we're going through right now is preparing us to be governors, magistrates, teachers in the new creation. In that sense, we're the epitome of God's creation because we get to go through this course of God's grace. As it says in the Bible, the angels watch the grace of God. We humans experience the grace of God. And because of that experience, we're being prepared for careers that the angels will not be able to fulfill.
What? All right. I'm looking forward to that book. In the meantime, you might want to pick up this one. This one is actually one of my favorite books ever, but definitely by Dr. Ross. He has some great books out there. And if you go to reasons.org, you can find them. I just really enjoyed talking about the transdimensionality of God, which gives a scientific look into the miraculous, into our universe. It just is meaty and uplifting, and it's like God geeky. And I loved it. I do. I'll look forward to your next book and to our next conversation. You can find Dr. Ross and a host of great scholars, writings, blogs at reasons.org. Thank you, Dr. Ross.
You're very welcome.
More SciTech Talk at MyMichelleLive.com.
Oh, that was so much fun. I love this show.